The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and family closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up. Seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we got Will Meadows,
Sarah Meadows,
Kevin Delp,
Melissa Delp,
Katie Pills,
and Ryan Pills
in the house.
So how many of us are sick? Raise your hand.
Three, two
four,
of us.
Two.
Two and a half.
Two and a half.
Oh, a little rough on the allergies / cold season / your listening ears.
We'll be fine. We'll take it.
This week we're talking about five games coming to Kickstarter the week of April 29th. No, 30th.
Plus maybe some more.
Plus
that
some other games that we may have missed last week because of dates not being published, but we will talk about all those, and they are coming to Kickstarter the week of April 30th, 2018.
There you
or
go.
Earlier.
Or earlier.
Or later. Or I don't know.
But they will be on Kickstarter when you check.
That's right.
So we played a bunch of games tonight. I played Way of the Panda.
Oh, by Simon?
Yeah.
Cool.
It was pretty cool. I think it took us like two rounds to figure out how to do it.
Yeah,
like,
sorry. That's because I tried to learn it ahead of time, and I need to play around when I learn a game.
So I was in the other game group, and we had already played like through two games. I said, so are you guys still like looking at the rules?
Reading the rules, yeah. Oh, it was a little slow taking off, but once we got into it, it was actually pretty cool.
Okay.
It's kind of a...
It wasn't quite as complicated as the rules made it seem like it was going to be.
Is it worker placement?
Kind of. It's more of like network building, but you're like moving. You're moving your panda masters. You have like a monk
and your champion
warrior. Yeah.
So Council of Four. You haven't played Council of Four.
I have played Council of Four.
There's only three.
Three
only
panda
three
masters.
Pandas.
Council of Four. Your network building too.
Oh with
your
yeah.
Moving. Right. But are you actually like
you're
moving
yes.
your?
The pandas are moving around. They have to be able to like defeat the pandas.
Building
the ninja
ninjas.
Warriors that are in their path.
Okay.
And then once they've defeated enough of the surrounding warriors, then they can build different city buildings.
Question, are the ninja warriors other players, or is that game stuff?
It's game stuff. Oh, okay. So you have to have enough, like, of your own warriors to cover up their warriors.
The miniatures, of course, look amazing.
Yeah, very cool.
And miniatures in, like, these cool fighting styles, except for Katie's.
What? Okay. Yeah.
Which were weird looking.
I think everybody had these, like, really fierce...
Super cool.
Fierce, cool-looking panda, like...
Swords and sides.
Like, monks. And mine was, like, a overweight child panda.
Kung Fu Panda?
Anime yeah. panda face.
Kung Fu Panda!
Anyway, it was really weird. Okay. But she was also a lame character. I didn't build her up enough.
So, the...
I think they're all pretty equal, but...
They're equal. Oh. I did not build up her stats.
So,
like
each player had three huge miniatures.
Yes.
And then, like...
And then you have a bunch of tiny Ewoks. Yeah. I mean, a little baby pandas.
They're super tiny.
Teeny tiny. And you use those as your, like, player action points. So you have a certain number of pandas that you can play.
I gotcha.
And you're working down this action board. You can't go back, which is kind of interesting. So you have to, like, pick actions that are in front of you. And it was pretty cool. We had a good time with it.
Yeah.
I don't know who actually won. We got a little cut off right at the end, and then I would like to claim that I won. But
you were ahead
a small lead.
By like one or two points.
With maybe a round or two to go.
Will
so.
Jumped up to an early lead, and then we all like
slowly
caught up. Like
up,
he was ahead by like 20 points or something ridiculous like that, and then we all like caught up to him towards the end. I don't know what happened. He like stalled out.
Yeah, I don't know what happened either. What were you guys playing on the other end of the table?
We played one prototype of Herbaceous Sprouts, which we'll talk about in a few weeks. And then we played Barker's Row from Overworld Games.
That one looked creepy cool.
It's like, I say it's a community trick-taking game, but...
Community?
Yeah, because there's all the cards are in the middle, and you're trying to... Like, there's different colors, sets, or suits... And they have their names, Oddities and Freaks, and your Barker's Row is like a carnival,
okay.
But it's like it's got this weird, like almost like a dark theme to it.
Yeah, it seems a little creepy.
Yeah, sure. A little creepy.
What was the tall giant stand-up?
So that's the strong man's tower. So you know, with the
with the big hammer.
Yeah. Okay. So you're trying to climb that tower, but no, actually you're not trying to climb the tower. The tower tells you how many cards of that set you have to complete in order to finish to complete your attraction. So if I'm on the fourth level,
okay.
or yeah, level four, I have to have four. Set or four numbers.
Cards. A value of four.
Value of four. So it could be a card that has a two, a wild card, another card of one to make four. And then I can turn that attraction in to basically get rubes.
Rubes.
Meeples. Oh, okay. Into my stands. Because they're attractions.
Yeah, okay. Are people coming to your carnival to sit in the grandstand?
Yeah, and you actually have like cardboard stadium seats.
Yeah, it was pretty
right?
cool.
That was,
yeah.
Yeah, like...
So the game itself. It's very simple in that, okay, I'm just trying to get this, I'm trying to get five numbers, five of a kind or whatever, and complete this attraction. But the attractions are kind of fun. They have extra like powers that you can use to basically get yourself ahead in the game. And like if you have if yours wilds card, wilds count as this instead of this or whatever. And then okay. but the components are cool. You got the strongman's tower, you got stands, the meeples are all like screen printed in like custom meeples.
Yeah, with different, like, there's little girls, and there's a clown with balloons, yeah. and all different
and all
types
kind
of people.
Kind of creepy, or were they normal?
They're weird looking. They're all weird looking. The attractions are weird looking, and as you complete your attractions, you're supposed to say, like, all the numbered cards have, like, amazing, marvelous.
Adjectives. Like, bone-chilling.
Yeah, and then your attractions, like, the three-headed monkey or something. Those are your attractions. Okay. So you're supposed to say, I've got this marvelous, bone-chilling, extraordinary cyclops or something like that.
Yeah, so it's basically like you're outside of your carnival tent, you know,
shouting at the passers-by.
Come see the gorilla. She's amazing. And so you're supposed to do every single one of the adjectives.
After the first couple.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, what do you have? Okay, that was cool. Let's just get through the numbers. It's like,
give me the points.
Give me the points.
But this game was funded on Kickstarter back, yeah. So we have the finished copy that we're going to be doing.
We'll do a video review of it.
Cool. So we mentioned this last week, and we're pretty excited that it actually came to pass.
What?
I know.
Foretelling the future.
Yeah, so we got Sarah Erickson from Renegade Game Studios. Let's welcome her to the house.
Hey!
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to it. So we're actually having Sarah on the game to talk about, or on the show to talk about the new RPG that Renegade is doing, Overlight. Sarah, do you want to just give us a quick rundown of Overlight?
Yeah, so Overlight is a kaleidoscopic role-playing game of journeys in a fantasy-type world, but this is not your typical fantasy world. So you're not going to see goblins and orcs and that kind of thing, because we already have a lot of really fantastic games where you can play in that type of setting. This is something completely different. So
and that's a very exciting thing for an RPG person for us, because that adds a whole new twist to fantasy world stuff.
Yeah. So what makes it kaleidoscopic?
So every part of this game is really just drenched in that rainbow prismatic feel of just really intense colors. So from everything starting with the art by Quan Chai Moria, it's really bright and vibrant. We don't need dark and dreary RPGs. We're in the 21st century here. We can get beyond that. So all of the art is very bright, but also the way that the system works has to do with the colors as well. So you'll notice that there are seven different shards, which are different sort of huge continents where different types of beings live. But there's also seven different colors, and those have to do with the seven different virtues inside the world. And each one of them, spirit, wisdom, logic, so on, do different things. So each one of them is associated with a color and with a type of folk that live here, and then also with a shard. So it's all just very interconnected.
That's really interesting. And I know that you touched on the system a little bit, but we were wondering, is this a new type of system altogether? Because from what we can see and what we can understand, it's not like a D20 system. It's not a D6 system. What kind of system are we looking at?
It is also incredibly different and unique, just like the rest of the game. So you are still rolling dice, but that's about where the similarities end. So there's success rolls. You could be maybe trying to beat do a skill test. So you're trying to beat a certain roll, but you're doing that by rolling a set of dice and looking for sixes or higher. But you're rolling not just D6s or D20s or whatever. You're rolling different types of dice depending on how good you are at that skill. But then you can also potentially be adding D4s. And these are really special in this system. Paul, the creator, always talks about how he feels like D4s don't get enough love. And they definitely do in this system. We call them the spirit dice. And when you use them, they are a bit of a push your luck mechanic. So they can help you out. They can get you some benefits. They can add to your test. But they can also cause you some problems if you push your luck too far. And they can do this thing called shattering, which we're going to be talking a little bit more about that during the campaign, but it's a really cool part of the system.
Awesome. So looking at this, and you talked about how the art is super colorful and fantastical, and I'm just looking at the art and the characters and the different creatures and all the different things that are involved here. Was there anything that was inspiration for this whole fantasy world? Was this somebody's imagination? How did whoever came up with it come up with all this stuff?
So this is a little bit earlier than my time, but I know that both Paul and George, the two co-creators, listened to a lot of like 60s and 70s music that I haven't listened to, but things like the band Yes, and it's very like psychedelic isn't quite the right word, but again, it's very colorful. It's a very particular style of music, and some of the album covers and some of the artwork associated with that music was part of what really inspired them to create just something that's very, very different. And the other thing that's interesting about this game is that Paul Alexander Butler has a degree in anthropology, and he's very into just learning about different parts of our own world and then taking those different parts and reusing them or modifying them to be something fantastical and exciting and different than what most of us playing RPGs have ever heard of before. But they're based in something that actually exists, which I think makes it even neater.
Oh, yeah, that sounds very interesting.
So what kind of characters will players be playing as?
So like I said before, there are these seven different shards, and there are characters in six of them that you'll be able to play. The other one is a little bit more mysterious, so you'll find out more about that as you really dive into this story. But you can play as, of course, humans. They're actually called Harkeen, and they are part of the virtue of will is their big deal. And they sort of live in the center shard, and that one is this humongous trade city that everybody else comes to. So there's those guys. There's also the Binyari, which are one of my personal favorites. They're very different. They're sort of trees and they're sort of mammals, but they're really a symbiotic relationship of both. So imagine.
Those do look really interesting. Oh, I've seen the artwork. It's interesting.
Oh my gosh, they're just super, super cool. So imagine like a bush that's filled with voles sort of tunneling all through it, but that's one creature. So that's one type of a being that you can play. But then there's also the Terexians. So they're very smart. They're very philosophical. They're all about wisdom. And they are sort of reptilian creatures that can fly with feathers. So they're almost like early dinosaurs, like flying dinosaurs, but not quite. And they're just very caring. They want to teach people things. So they're really neat. There's also the Aramel. We're very thin, elongated creatures that look vaguely humanoid, but they're really got this really super deep culture of passing along these projects that they're working on, like building monuments or building something that's an artifact that's very special to them. And they wear these masks. So they take a mask And when they're about to die, they'll pass that mask on to their children, who will then take on that mask and wear it as if they were the original creator and then continue the project. So there's these generational lawn things that they're creating, but they're very political. They're sort of closed off. They're a little bit harder to get to know than some of the other creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also have the Pyroi. They live on the very bottom shard, which is near the Sea of Stars. And it's always kind of in the darkness because you have these seven stacked shards that are all continent-sized, and they're all vertically in a column. And there's light up above and then the Sea of Stars below. The Pyroi live at the very bottom. And they're, think like huge, bulky, and sort of volcanic, thick skinned creatures that are known for being very charismatic, and they're the diplomats of the world. But they're also incredible.
That's not what you would expect with a big, bulky, volcanic character. Yeah.
It sounds like there's some really cool races people can be. Can you tell us a little bit about like character progression? I know in like your standard RPG, you're going up like a character class and you're collecting items and that sort of thing. Is that also in Overlight?
So yes, you will be collecting things. You will be progressing as a character. But more so, you'll be also accumulating these shatters, which are when, like I said before, you'll be pushing your luck a little bit too far. And when that happens, they will definitely modify something about your character in an interesting way. And they're also going to be
interesting.
Yeah, there will also be other surprises along the way as you go through some of the stories in the book. But you aren't forced to just follow that story. It is a very story-driven system. So if you want to take the information that's in the book and go crazy and do something totally different with it and go on your own path, then you're welcome to do that. So I also think that's a really great part of this system.
Yeah. So what is... switching gears a little bit, what this is Renegade's first RPG, and what made Renegade decide they wanted to jump into the RPG world?
So there, we've been doing RPGs for a long time. I'm sorry. We've been doing board games for a long time, but Scott Gaeta, the president of Renegade, has been playing RPGs for forever. And I think that that's not really that unusual when you start talking to people who are currently playing board games. They're kind of the hot new thing. But how many of us were playing D&D in our basements in the 80s? That's why I started. Things is kind of, they really touched a chord with a lot of people when they had that as a main focus in the story. And I think that's not unusual. And so all of us have played RPGs a long time ago, and now we're kind of getting back to it again. And so not only was Scott just really excited about the prospect of doing an RPG in general, but then we were talking to some of our great friends, Paul and George, about just this idea that they had. They weren't even pitching it. They were just talking about it. And Scott just fell in love with the idea. And honestly, I haven't played a lot of RPGs, but I really did too. This is just such a different world. And what's great about it is that we can take this world, now that we've done all the work of creating the characters that live there, creating the setting that they're in, and all their stats and all this type of stuff, we can take that backbone and use it to build pretty much any type of game that we want now. So why not put out
it
the RPG?
It's very flexible. It's a very flexible system. You can just kind of go crazy with it. That's pretty exciting. Could you tell us just real quick, when this episode airs, I believe your Kickstarter will already be on. Could you just tell us real fast, like, where people need to go to find information about this game or RPG system, and maybe how they can contact you with questions or anything you want to tell us about the Kickstarter itself?
Sure. Yeah. So please go to renegadegames.com/overlight. And that's where we're going to store all the information. You can learn out all about the different characters that you can play, all the different folk in this world, and anything else that we've spoiled will be hosted there. And then also on that same page, you can look for the contact us button if you want to find out more. But yes, please look for our Kickstarter page once that's live. We'll be posting it all over the place, so hopefully it won't be too hard to find, but you can always just search Overlay Kickstarter and I'm sure you'll find it.
Okay, and what is... what are the pledge levels like on your Kickstarter? Are they going to be like getting the core rule book, or are there other like add-ons available? Or
yeah, we're going to keep it pretty simple. This is our very first one, so we don't want to go too crazy yet. But we'll have just three pledge levels that you pick from initially. So you either just do the $1 pledge just so that you can get the updates and you can then go and buy it at your friendly local game store when it comes out. You can also do the PDF edition, which you'll get the digital edition. Then you can use that however you wish. And then also any other digital stretch goals that we have. But then if you are wanting the full shebang, you can do the actual physical core rule book. So that's going to be a 300-page approximately hardcover rule book, and that'll come along with the PDF as well. So we'll send you both. And then also you can add extra things onto that too. So we'll have a few add-ons. Some of those are going to be unlockable. Everybody who pledges at any level and pays for shipping, so either the physical book or if you want to do the PDF and pay for extra shipping, you also get a really nice dice bag that's exclusive to Kickstarter, that's the Founders dice bag for the Skyborn Order. And the Skyborn Order is the group that you are, as a player, you're part of the Skyborn. So that's why that one's called that one.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much, Sarah, for joining us and talking to us about Overlight. And we hope to hear more about it as it comes out on Kickstarter. We look forward to seeing how successful it'll be.
Well, thank you guys so much. Yeah, it was great chatting with you.
Bye. Well, it's great having Sarah on the show from Renegade Game Studios. And Overlight sounds like it's going to be amazing.
Oh, it looks awesome.
I'm really looking forward to seeing how that turns out. Let's go into our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption.
Will, take it away.
All right, so I don't know which game I'm looking at first. Am I looking at Brook City?
Yeah.
All right, so Brook City is a 1-4 player game from Blacklist Games coming to Kickstarter. Somebody will give me the date on
May 1st.
Sure.
May 1st.
It's pretty cool. It's like a giant, It's a giant miniature moving around strategy game. You play cool, famous 80s looking cops.
They're cool.
You got like Mel Gibson in there, and I think George Clooney, is he a cop? I don't know, but a bunch of cool looking characters, and they are all over the board trying to solve crimes, collect things, shoot people, play cool cards. What else do you think, Sarah?
Yeah, you play as a copy of your own deck, and then each player takes their turn, and you have some actions and some movements that you can do, and ultimately you're trying to find the clues from the case and solve the case, also while taking down
stopping
the criminals.
A bunch of criminals.
So this is a co-op game.
Yes.
It is, yeah. And cool things are like you've got... you're a person, and you've also got vehicles. So every time you like leave a vehicle, you can like commandeer a new vehicle, or maybe leave a building. Okay. So you could like steal a scooter.
Yeah. And then, well, like, you don't want to steal a scooter. You want a speedboat or you know, something else.
So we have a demo copy of this.
We do, yeah.
And I saw the box cover looked amazing, but then the inside, there's this huge like...
Right, this one's neoprene. I don't know what the final piece will be. Okay. But for the prototype, ginormous mat. Fills like the half width of our table.
And the miniatures are cool, and they got cool miniature cars and stuff?
You do, yeah, a bunch of cars. I don't know if they'll have, do you think they'll have miniatures for all of them? I didn't really get that. You have police cars for sure, and then as you go through the game drawing cars,
it'd be
you
cool
get, like,
stretch goals.
The scooters and things like that.
I'm sure it will be something like stretch goals. The miniatures for your characters look great. Each person gets their own police officer that will be their character, and everyone has different player powers and strengths depending on that character. So it'll be nice. There will be several to choose from. We were given a two-player variant for demoing. But
it goes up to four players.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, but really cool art, really cool pieces. It seemed like the game flow worked really well, and like what, you've got cheat sheets to kind of help you along.
What kind of gamer would this really appeal to?
I actually did enjoy it a lot, but I think Ryan and Katie would have a lot of fun playing it. Like, if you're playing the minis games and Zombicide and some of those ones where you're moving around the board and, like, strategically counting your actions and things like that, it's definitely that type of game.
Okay.
But I didn't feel real heavy. Like, it was once we got all the cards in the right order, which I think we, you know, they were out of order because of the demo copy.
Sure.
Then we were able to jump into it pretty quick.
Cool. And this uses a modular deck system.
Which they've used before, this company.
Yes, so there will be, you know, several cases, several criminals, several cops. You'll pick from those and make your own scenario.
So it's not quite campaign, but it does have, like, a bunch of different ways that you can play it, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
What else were you looking at?
Next, we're looking at Treasure Mountain.
Oh, I played this with you, Sarah.
Yeah, and this is from August Games, designer Daniel George. And this is a 2-4 player worker placement game where you are a family of dwarves and you are trying to work in the mines and collect gems. What did you think about it, Kevin?
Yeah, at the beginning I was like, oh, I'm going to try and build my mine up and do that. But it's more than just tile laying, because you've got that worker placement plus the tile laying, and you're like, okay, do I just want to get gems? No, because gems at the end of the game are only worth 1 point, but if you can get those gems and trade them in for gold, gold's worth 2 points each, which I think is really important. And then talk about, like, even the mines themselves.
Yeah, so the mines, you will build your own mine in front of you collecting tiles. So there's places on the board to get those tiles. And then depending on which color, there's four different colors. Mm-hmm. Depending on which colors you collect, where you place those tiles will depend on what points you are allowed to get for those, being able to mine the things. And then really there's a section where there's a market to sell the gems that you've mined out of the mine shafts. So I did think it had an interesting mechanic. Once you go on the board, like some worker placements, you're allowed to displace another player.
And bump them
from that spot.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that.
So I thought that was interesting. If you bump some player, if they are a higher player, that player can take another turn.
Yeah, and the cool thing about this bumping mechanic is all the meeples that you control have numbers, 1, 2, 3, depending on the number of players that you're playing with, you get a certain number of meeples. So I could have a 4-player game, you get 3 meeples, 1, 2, and 3. Well, those numbers mean something because the number 3, he's got the longer beard than a number 2 meeple, than a number 1 dwarf meeple. So a number 3 meeple with the longer beard can bump a lower meeple off. So I think there's a little bit of strategy of how you can bump and when you can bump.
So does that mean like a number 1 can't bump a number 3?
Yes. Number 1 cannot.
There's like a hierarchy there. Mm-hmm. That you have to
Then there's also a dragon that comes out if you go to certain spaces on the board, there's a chance for the dragon to attack.
Yeah. Which means you could like lose half your like goods depending on gems or gold or stuff like that.
Yeah. Is that like a push your luck or is that like a...
Yeah, it's a little bit of, it's sort of push your luck because you're going to be rolling a die, but eventually that dragon just keeps going down the track. Eventually it's going to happen.
I would compare that section to the Kingsburg portion where you have the seasons and you're building up some resources and then specifically
you know it's coming.
And there's ways to look at what tile the dragon is going to be next that you're going to fight. It's going to be a 2-6 or
other thing was the King's Chamber. I forget the name of it, but you can actually, like, if you have collected certain amounts of like rubies or emeralds, there's like goals cards that you can actually get major points for. It's not like you're turning in those stuff. It's just like if you have it, you're going to get, like, for every 5 rubies, you're going to get 3 points. So strategizing that while you're also trying to turn things in is, I think, really important.
Well, and what's key, I think, is using those locations when other people don't have much of a supply.
Right.
Then you can, you know, get 10, 20 victory points off of something.
Yep.
And you can see clearly, oh, everybody else doesn't have these things that are available right at this time.
Yeah. So this is actually a relaunch. Campaign for Treasure Mountain, and I think you should go check it out.
Yeah. Melissa, what do you got?
Well, I'm looking at a game that's actually already on Kickstarter.
What?
I know. It's an expansion. It is Villages of Valeria, the Landmarks expansion. Mm-hmm. It's already funded, and this is a full expansion for the Villages of Valeria game by Daily Magic Games. And it's going to add some new mechanics to the game, landmarks that are going to give you extra points if you can collect them, if you have the most, or if you have sets of different ones.
I enjoy playing Villages of Valyria.
Yeah, it has an interesting follow mechanic, kind of like Race for the Galaxy or Puerto Rico, where if the active player takes a certain action, then other people can take that action with a lesser benefit.
Cool.
So, yeah, I think we previewed this way back when it first came out, which has been a while now. So if you're interested in Villages of Valyria, there is an expansion. You can also, with the Kickstarter, get the base game if you don't already have that.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
So they've already unlocked quite a few stretch goals. So if you like anything that Daily Magic does in the Valyria world,
this is a great one.
Check out Villages of Valyria, the landmark
expansion. Right. Are we on this?
Yes, one of our quotes is on the page from last time. So
good job, Melissa.
Yeah, so I just wanted to give them a shout out. Already on Kickstarter. Katie, what do you have?
All right, so I'm looking at Forbidden City. It's a 2-4 player game, and it is tile placement.
Yay!
So it is a strategic tile placement, and basically the idea of this game is that it's set in ancient China, and it's there's a young emperor that has come into power, except for he's too young to rule. And so you are like one of the advisors, and you're trying to spread your influence throughout the Forbidden City, which is like the palace, by placing down room tiles of your color. And it looks a little bit like it'll work sort of the same way like the cities in Carcassonne work, where there's like certain borders that would close off the cities, would close off rooms. And so you're trying to like close off rooms where you have the majority of the color. So it looks like it's a really strategic tile placement. It looks like it's going to be a fairly simple game that's going to be pretty thinky, if I just had to guess. You're going to have to do a lot of maneuvering based off of what other players have decided to do. It does say it's going to be ages 8 and up, so it seems like it's a pretty kid-friendly game, too. The art, the cover art on this is, like, very beautiful. I will say, as an art person, I look at this and I'm like, oh yeah, this definitely looks like old Asian style printmaking.
Oh, cool.
But I think it looks more Japanese than Chinese.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. I think that's a little bit interesting, but I like this style better myself. So.
Maybe that's why I chose it.
It could be.
The aesthetic decision wins every time.
Yeah. So, anyway, so that was Forbidden City. Ryan, what about you?
Well, this game is already on Kickstarter, or at least it should be by the time this airs. April 25th from Mantic Games is Hellboy.
And you have to do a cool IP one?
Yeah.
Good job, Ryan.
I stole it from you. I was like, ha, my. Hellboy the board game. Originally, I think it was going to be one of those Dungeon Master versus four cooperative player games. But they removed the Dungeon Master aspect of it, so it's fully cooperative. As far as I can tell right now, you're actually fighting against an impending doom track and encounter cards that you reveal every time you enter a new room. And everybody plays as one of the agents from the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. So you get to be Hellboy or Liz Sherman or Abe Sapien, you know.
See the fish dude?
Yeah, the fish guy. And you have miniatures that you're moving around a map. And
variable player powers?
Yes. Everybody has an agent card with their own powers. They have special rules for that character, and they can take unique actions. And all of your actions have, they're going to rely on the same four skills, but each person, there's custom dice that you roll to resolve the skills. And depending on the color of the die, you'll either be stronger or weaker in one of the skills. And you have items that you can equip, like pistols and Hellboy's coat. And it just looks like it's going to be a fun game. I think they're trying to get away from the traditional dungeon crawler, but I'm kind of feeling like it's still a little bit of a dungeon crawler, And I don't know, it looks really cool. The art is classic Hellboy art.
Yeah, it's
and
a,
I want to try it out.
Comic book art, not the video, not the new movies.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. That looks real slick.
Oh, so it's basically a mixture of exploration, investigation, and combat. They didn't want to go too heavy on the combat as these games tend to go sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I'll be interested to see how they manage to balance that all out.
Cool.
Will, I think you have another game?
I do. I was just going to mention it quickly. I don't, to be entirely honest, I don't actually want to play this game. I just think it looks amazing.
So this is a diamond you're not picking up? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know what I'm saying. This is called Zero Gravity. It's from District Games. And it's a like three-dimensional placement-y of persons games, war strategy. But it's, I don't even know how, right, Ryan, help me describe this. The board is magnetic.
Okay, doesn't it, one of those neck pillow, doesn't it look like a neck pillow?
I would not describe it as a neck pillow. It looks like a cube with the front and the back punched out of it. And then it's a grid board, so you're moving these players all over.
I was thinking of another one.
It's like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. It's
a capture the flag type of game.
I literally don't know anything that except that it looks awesome. You should just go look at it for sure. When they show them doing combat, like it looks like someone on the base level can shoot a dude who's up on the like vertical side wall, and then it's the measurement type of game where you're measuring your range, but you're not like measuring it along the two flat surfaces of the board game. You're measuring it against
three dimensional. Yeah.
Weird. So you're in like a tube.
Yes, that's a good
very short
tube is a good word.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, doesn't that look crazy?
Yeah.
All kinds of cool miniature action going on. I don't know how you would play this game, but I want to watch other people play it.
This is the one I was thinking of.
Gravity Warfare.
Yeah.
It does kind of look like a pillow.
Oh, okay. A neck pillow.
Yeah.
This is just, not that one's already on Kickstarter.
Yeah. It's interesting seeing what they're doing with games these days with, like, throwing it off your traditional 2D playing surface. Mm-hmm. I saw something at a convention that was going on. I wasn't at this convention, but it looked like there was a big game board in the shape of a dodecahedron.
What?
And I guess the things were like magnetically attached, but it was the world as a dodecahedron, and they were like moving things
around the outside
around this globe.
Yes, I've seen that game too.
It was odd. I don't know what was going on, but I want to get in on that.
Yeah, try the dimensional world, because it's pretty cool. So magnets and fun. I didn't even give any description of the game, so if you want to know more about Zero Gravity and its cool lookingness, go check it out somewhere.
Yeah, I think I looked on BGG and it was like area control, role play, miniatures, and I said, oop, not for me.
Not for me, but people who enjoy those will probably love it.
People who like fun.
Yeah.
We should jump into our next interview.
Let's do it. Let's talk to David Abelson from
Fisher Heaton Games. Welcome to the house.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Fisher Heaton Games.
Fisher Heaton Games is a new independent game company. We've only been around for about a year, a little less than a year. We're located right here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And is me.
Very, very cool. So you've already published one game, Intel, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah,
that one came out in January.
January 2018. So that was a two-player, like a strategy game, would you call it?
Yeah, it's a two-player abstract strategy game.
Abstract strategy, that's the word I was looking for, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, we enjoyed playing that, did a preview of that. So we have you on the show because we need to talk about the next game that's coming up, and that is Moonshot. We talked about it a little bit last week, and thanks for sponsoring last week's episode. We appreciate it. Now we have you on for an interview, and we want to hear more about Moonshot and maybe talk to us a little bit about like we want to talk about behind the scenes of Moonshot. So tell us about some of the thought process of going into it. Is this your design? I see another name on this. Is you and your son, or?
It's a co-design with my brother, actually, my big brother.
Brother?
Yeah.
Okay.
my brother kind of helped with conceiving the game. The core movement mechanic of the game, which you mentioned, is a roll and move mechanic. Is based on a 4,000-year-old Korean game that my brother and his recently married wife played for a New Year's celebration. And he mentioned it to me, and we started talking about it, and it sort of blossomed into this space-themed racing game that now includes things like wagering and several other elements.
Very cool, very cool. So the game is called Moonshot, space theme. Why did you come up with a space themed game? Just like sort of just come to you, or did you have different iterations? Or
I want to say this is the first place we went. The original design just ended up sort of laying out really well for planets. We started actually in our own solar system, and we were flying to the moon, but we couldn't really figure out a good way to make that happen and seem real. So we left the Milky Way and went to a different galaxy that doesn't really exist.
So would you say this is more for families? For what type of gamers are you trying to bring into the hobby with this game?
This is definitely a family game. It's for two parents to play with their up to teenage children, as I do with mine. Okay. Or for a bunch of teenagers to play, or college students, or for some adults who really just like a light game with a lot of player interaction.
Okay. Well, we already have a preview of this on our channel, and I love the game mat. It's cool to roll it out and see all the planets on there. Is that what you're planning when you go to Kickstarter? Is that a play mat instead of a game board?
That is the plan. There's a 14x33 neoprene play mat included in the game. And cool. I'm pretty excited about that, too.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The ships, tell us, we just had the 3D printed ships. Tell us a little bit about the ships themselves.
So the 3D printed ships that you have represent the size and shape of the ships that are included in the game as we begin the Kickstarter. My hope is, and this is sort of a secret at this point, but my hope is that we're going to upgrade to some 3D models, assuming we can hit a stretch goal.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the reward levels for the backers.
Okay, so the base pledge level for the game is $45, and what that gets you is a copy of the game and U.S. shipping.
Okay.
Then, of course, international shipping will be charged additionally. We've got a step up from that that gets you a copy of the complete Moonshot game and also a copy of Intel. That's a $65 pledge level. And then we've got a couple of sort of unique ones at the top of the scale there where you can have us help you, or I should say you can help us design a card, a tactics card to be included in the game. And then another level above that where we can have our illustrator, Rebecca McConnell, draw one of the characters in your likeness.
So the game Moonshot is coming to Kickstarter April 24th, so this will already be live.
Yes,
am I correct? Okay, April 24th. Time travel. So, yeah, I know. I always have to do this 7-day time travel. But the stretch goals, can you tell us any of the ones that you're really excited about?
Well, only some of the stretch goals are published, and I didn't put the most exciting ones first.
Tell us the ones that you can talk about then.
We are definitely going to add 4 cards to the tactics deck. The standard tactics deck has 40 cards in it. We're going to add 4 new cards to that give players additional interaction. We're also going to, of course, upgrade. I'm looking forward to a stretch goal that gets us a really nice collectible magnetic box. And the 3D ships are really what I'm pushing for. I hope we get all the way there.
Remind me of the player count again. It's 2 to 5?
It's 3 to 5.
3 to 5. Yeah, it's nicer to have more players with the interaction. Keep it that way? Sorry. Or are you trying to get lower or higher player counts?
We like the 3 to 5 player count for this one. We've tested it with 2 and 6, and we found that 2, there wasn't enough player interaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's much better to play Intel if you have 2 players.
Yeah, there you go. Just buy Intel.
Yeah, and then with 6 or more players, it just became too chaotic for the game. So we like 3 to 5.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of Kickstarters try to add everything to please everyone, and sometimes a game suffers if you don't focus and stick with what you know is actually a good game and what you have tested. I know we saw you at Unpub 8. What sort of playtesting and process did you go through to bring Moonshot from concept to where you are now?
Moonshot has been about 2 years in the process. In fact, it's been on Kickstarter once before, and we've made a lot of changes since even that. We took it to several cons. We've had all different kinds of people play the game. I think one of the things for me that was most important was I wanted to get people of all different ages and genders and a variety of all different people playing the game and see how they interact with each other. More focused on the interaction than I was about anything else. So we've taken it to Unpub. I'll be bringing it to Proto Atlanta, which I think you guys are going to be at as well, right?
Yeah, Ryan and Katie will be there.
Oh, okay. And then we took it to Gen Con. It's been to Origins and Dice Tower Con and all these great places where just, I would say random people have played it, but that's what we were looking for.
Cool.
Does that answer your question? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was awesome.
Yeah, I think people really want to know sometimes, has the game been played? Has it been tested? And we know that you've put a lot into that.
Yeah, it's been all over Charlotte, too.
So Moonshot is from April 24th to when? How long is the campaign?
So the campaign will run till Memorial Day weekend.
Okay. So if you're listening to this, look on Kickstarter now and check out Moonshot. We want to go into, I know that you've done Intel, we have Moonshot on Kickstarter right now, but I know you have some other games in the works, so tell us maybe what one or two of those games are.
Okay, we're working on a number of designs. I would say they're all in various sort of states at this point. We do
you
have
talk
one
about
game
the ones
that
you
I'm
want
hopeful.
To talk about.
Oh, thanks. We do have one that I'm hopeful about for. It's called Healer's Path. And it's a light dice worker placement game that is for 2 to 4 players. That one, it's almost there. A little bit more work on that one. What it is it places people in a sort of a fictitious universe where they're apprentice healers. And they're all vying for the position of master healer. And so they collect flowers and make medicine and heal people and attempt to be the best at it. We've got another game that we're working on that actually is about goats.
Okay.
That's where I'm going to stop.
You say
on that
goats,
one.
Not ghosts, right?
Goats like
the animals.
Bad. Yeah, goats.
Very cool. Very cool. Will we see you at any other cons? You said Proto Atlanta. What other cons will you be attending?
I'll be at Proto Atlanta. I'll be at Origins, and I'll be at Dice Tower Con. I think that's my dance card for this year, and I'll be at Mega Moose Con again, one of my favorite locals.
Cool. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you at those. Before we say goodbye, tell the listeners where they can find out more about Fisher Heaton Games.
They can go to our website, fisherheatongames.com, or they can check us out on Instagram or Twitter at Fisher Heaton.
Wonderful. It was great having you on the show tonight, David. And we wish you all the luck with Moonshot on Kickstarter now.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Bye. It was great having David on the show from Fisher Heaton Games. Don't forget to check out Moonshot. But this weekend coming up is Proto ATL. And I think some people from Tantrum House are going to be there.
That's right. Katie and I will be there. And we'd love to meet you if you want to hang out with us. I'm not sure how long we'll be there, but we'll be there at least most of Saturday.
Okay.
We're really looking forward to it.
You already got your badge?
Yes, I got. I think it said I was a special guest.
Special. Not just media, special guest.
I hope I don't have to like give a speech or something. I don't.
All right, now would all the special guests come to the front and?
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic. So that's this Saturday.
May 4th, 5th, and 6th.
A week out.
Yeah.
And then
May the 4th.
May the 4th.
Do we need to have a special episode for that? Is that when this goes live?
No, this goes live April 30th.
Okay, let's be ready for that.
Yeah.
Let's not drop the ball entirely.
We have time to do something for May the 4th.
Okay, good. What else are we doing tomorrow in future time?
in future time, we
when
have,
this goes live.
That's right. This is the last day, April 30th, this goes live. Our Gleam contest ends today. So tomorrow, May 1st, check out all the winners at tantrumhouse.com. We'll have a special post about that.
Yeah,
winners
that's
for what?
Our celebration of our 10,000 subscribers. I just told you.
Melissa's already asking the question. She
I know,
said.
You didn't say. She was so giving us asking the question. Serving it up for you.
So thank you guys so much for joining our YouTube channel. That's been fantastic.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you move on over to our Facebook page and some of our other social media. That's where we share a lot of additional stuff besides just our videos. Our website, we keep it live and healthy as well. And we'd love to have you guys join us in all those places. But thank you so much again for the YouTube.
We got over 10,000 subscribers. We're already
keep on rolling.
So maybe we should do something else when we get
start
more.
Start planning the 15.
Are we gonna
do the skydiving thing? Can we put that back on the table? Is that
you guys can go skydiving?
Skydiving. Yep.
No. Kevin and I will film it from the ground.
Ooh, sounds good. All right. Well, let's plan on that. Thanks again for joining us. We will catch you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard. Thank you!